Board of Building Commission's Product Approval Program Oversight Committee meeting of May 27, 2021. So I want to remind us a little bit about our participation process, being aware of background noise. So keep yourselves on your mics on mute, or if you're using your phone's on mute, but not on hold. Please wait till you're called on to speak. I'll call on everybody in order as we progress through, and just again, be really aware of background noise because typing and different things does project through. Okay, I'm going to now conduct a roll call to assume that we to ensure that we have a quorum. Commissioner Hershberger?
Here.
Commissioner Bore? Okay. Commissioner Compton?
Here.
Commissioner Gilson?
I'm here.
And Commissioner Swope? We also have another person who just joined by phone. If you would also identify yourself, please. Caller number 7. Jim will.
Zubeidi Binigi.
All right, that's Zubeidi. Okay. So, we have present from DEPR in alphabetical order Tom Campbell, Jim Hammers, Chris Howell, Mo Madani, and Justin Bogle, and then Zubeidi Binigi. I missed the alphabetical order, but anyway, Zubeidi as well. And then myself, Jeff Blair, as the commission's facilitator. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Commissioner Hershberger for approval of the agenda and then the minutes.
All right, everyone's had a chance to look at the agenda. Does anyone have any changes to the agenda or additions? If not, I need a motion for approval.
Compton, move to approve.
Second.
Great. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, signify aye.
Aye.
Agenda is approved. Next, let's move on to the minutes. I think everyone's had a chance to look at the minutes prior to the meeting. Are there any changes or additions to the minutes? Hearing none, can I have a motion for approval?
I'm to move to approve.
In a second. Thank you. All in favor? Ayes?
Aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. And we'll turn it over to, is it Mo or Jeff doing the facilitator summary report?
You can just ask for a motion to approve the April 1st minutes and facilitator summary report.
Okay, great. Everyone's had a chance to read those. So can I have a motion for approval?
Count to move approval.
In a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor? Ayes?
Aye.
Aye.
Unanimously approved. Okay, moving on to product applications.
Jeff. Yes, sir. So if we should go ahead and do the product approval program issues, and you know, the first is product approval statistics, and you would ask Zubeidi to provide those if you look at C on the little annotated piece.
Right. Zubeidi, can you update these?
Sure. For 2020 Florida building code, we have 4,288 approved product applications, and the total is 5,031. For the products, we have 17,457 approved products, and the total is 20,401. And for the entities, we have 128 approved entities, and the total is 415. That concludes the statistics report. Thank you.
Thank you, Zubeidi. Next, we'll have a report on conditional approvals from the April 13th meeting.
Mo, do you want to report on that? Mo, you're muted if you wanted to report on FL 14-722.
right. Now can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you now. Go ahead.
All right. Good. Hey, just a status of this application. They is still out of standings, has not been yet approved, and that's because the quality they have an issue with the quality assurance or establishing quality assurance program. So we just continue to hope that they will do it soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mo. Next, we'll move into the review and discuss HB 401. And I believe from the conversation we had, Mo, you're going to take this?
Yes, I'm going to take it. Jim, can you make me the presenter? I'm going to be able to go over certain information here. All right. And can you see my screen?
Yes, we can, Mo.
Good. On the agenda, I have a number of things under this item, which is really to review, you know, and discuss the new change to the product approval system as it relates to evaluation entities by House Bill 401. And in the summary that is in front of you, I have outlined Section 6 of the legislation, which mainly revised the statute for the product approval, Section 553.842 for the statute. And in that section, the change is mainly, as stated here under item number A, evaluation entity approved under this paragraph or that meets the criteria for approval adopted by the commission by rule. So what they have done is really they expanded the authority of the Florida Building Commission to approve evaluation entities such as, you know, when you say evaluation entities, such as the ICC, International Code Council, Intertech, UL, et cetera. And I will go over the current situation. So it's really, well, now what we're trying to do is see if what criteria we want to use to approve these entities and or provide recommendation to the commission for approving such criteria and ultimately revise the rule. The other part is number 14, where they mainly, with regard to the revocation and suspension, they now included those evaluation entities that is approved by statute. So they're subject to the same rules with regard to revocation and suspension. So the current situation at this point, as I outlined here for the product evaluation entity, currently the commission has no authority to approve a product evaluation entity, which I stated earlier. And by statute, and the only way to get approved as an evaluation entity has been by statute. And by statute so far, that we have a number of evaluation entities that has been approved, and here under Section 61G20-3.008, it lists those entities. We have the National Evaluation Services, which is ICC, the Miami-Dade County Building Code Compliance Office, the International Code Council, also IES, the International Association of Plumbing and Mechanical Official Evaluation Services, Intertech, and I believe UL too. In addition to that, architects and engineers are approved as an evaluation entity by statute. The rule 61G20-3.002, a definition defined for us what's an evaluation entity. It says an approved product evaluation entity means an organization recognized by Florida law or approved by the commission pursuant to section 61G-3.0081 to evaluate a product for compliance with the code or intent of the code. So they have the authority to really approve products for compliance with the code or intent of the intent of the code. Certification entity, which really fall in terms of approval, fall within the scope of the Florida Building Commission. The rule defines certification in, agency says means an organization approved by the commission pursuant to section 61G to certify a product. So what they do, normal certification entities, they're limited to many certification of the product as meeting specific standards. They don't really normally certify a product as meeting the intent of the code.
Hey, Mo, if you would, you're speaking with your phone, is that correct?
Yeah, through my phone, yeah.
Okay, if you could turn the volume off on your computer, because the two of them are creating a little bit of feedback. We're able to hear you, but...
I don't have a volume, actually, on my... Let's see, hold a second.
Well, that's a lot better. Whatever you're doing now is a lot better.
Okay, yeah, I'm holding the, you know, the handset. No problem. Okay, so the certification entity, as I said, it mainly certifies... compliance with the standard. Let's see here. In terms of the criteria for approving certification entities, those are outlined in section 61G20-3.008. And the criteria mainly is stated in section in number 4. It says approved certification agency criteria. And A, it says an entity shall be approved by the commission as certification agency if it complies with one of the following. And one of them is a certification agency accredited by ANSI that meets the requirement of ISO 65. So if they are accredited by ANSI, as meaning the ISO 65, they come in and they put in an application and ultimately get approved by the commission. The number 2, certification agency accredited as meaning the requirement of ISO 65, again, but not by ANSI, by other accreditation, approved accreditation entities. And then number B says certification agency shall apply to the commission, which is they do an online application for approval, by filing an application as provided by subsection 61G20-3.011, including certificate of independence in accordance with rule 61G-3.009. And it says under number C, approval shall be valid until such time as commission approval requirement change. The certification agency no longer qualified under current requirement if the accreditation expires or is removed or is both expired and removed or the approval is suspended or revoked. So far we have about 20 certification entity that's approved under the program. There's here some certain notes that, with regard to the issue here. First of all, ISO 65, that's currently referenced in the rule, is an obsolete standard. This standard has been withdrawn, and it has been replaced by ISO 17065-2012. And currently, with the exception to architectural engineer license in the state, evaluation entity is listed under are also the majority of the evaluation entities that approved through the statute, they are also approved as a certification entities, and the accreditation standards or the way they accredited and approved under the certification is mainly majority, all of them really, refer to ISO 17065 as the accreditation standard for approval. So ISO, again, ISO guide 17065 is the sole accreditation standard for both entities. So regardless of your evaluation entity in this case, or a certification entity, the credential is really based on ISO 17065. The ISO 17065 for this standard is really, it's more of a, if you look at the scope, it says the international standard contain requirements for competence, consistent operation and of a product, a process and service. So it really is focuses on the operation of that entity. Do they have the staff necessary to do the work? Do they have a system that is really credible? And also that do they provide a competent service? So it's more of a program that you can use to audit an entity and show that they are, they can do the job or they qualify to do the job. So that's really what ISO 17065. Looking at where we are with regard to the certification entity and the credentials that evaluation entity currently holding, we feel that as a staff, a good option for establishing criteria for approving evaluation entity is to subject the evaluation entity's approval to criteria similar to those for approving certification entity, including updating ISO 65 to ISO 17065 2012. That's really the feasible approach to it. However, if we are open for any suggestions or anything for other options. So this is what I have for you. If you have any question, please do. Thank you.
All right, so this is Jeff. So what we're going to do is we're going to take public comment. If you have any questions, we'll take those first. We'll take public comment, and then we'll come back, and there's two proposed motions in order to implement the legislative requirements of House Bill 401 into our rule, various components of the rule that Mo just outlined. And I'll read two separate proposed motions for you when we get to that, after that point. So does any TAC or POC member have any questions of what Mo just presented first? Okay, is there any public comment?
This is Carrie. Jeff, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, Carrie Hebray. Good morning, everybody. I just want to say I think that this is a good approach, and if you could kind of walk us through the timeline. I have a client, PFS Pico, that will qualify for this. Walk us through the timeline on the application and what all they'll need to do to make this happen and when you think that may take place. I mean, obviously, I know the commission has to bless what you guys do today, but then going forward, what you see that timeline being.
Okay. Well, after we hear the rest of the comment, will it? Tom and or Justin and Mo, we couldn't sort of walk through the process. But let's hear the rest of the public comment.
Go ahead. Okay, I just want to say I want to thank the department for acting on this so quickly as well. And I will be meeting with the governor's staff this afternoon on House Bill 401.
Great, thanks, Carrie. Okay, anybody else in the public wish to comment?
Yes, Jamie Gaskin.
Go ahead, Jamie.
Good morning, everyone. I would just want to add that when this is being considered for the rule development, that some clause or indication be made that it would be in addition to those entities already recognized by law. Establishing these procedures under 17065 is adequate. I support that. Definitely these would be new entities that come into certification or requiring participation in this program to indicate that they follow those provisions. I support that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jamie. Any other public comment?
Yes, this is Steve Winnesdorfer. I'm with PFS TECO, the company that Carrie just mentioned.
Okay.
I assume you can hear me.
We can, yes.
Obviously we're supportive of this action too, and we appreciate the kind of the action that the legislature has taken. The process in the past has been burdensome, so we appreciate that. In addition to PFS TECO is already recognized as four different types of agencies or entities in Florida, and this will really complete our ability to provide, you know, kind of complete service for clients there. We're already a 17065 agency, so we look forward to being able to submit our application as an evaluation entity.
Great, thank you. All right, any other public comment? Okay, so going back to the POC, in order to implement this, and Tom or whomever, Tom, Justin, and or Mo, if you want to respond, I think Jamie's question is easily answered and carries in terms of just an overview of the rule development timeline that we're under. If you want to do that, we can do that, and then we can go ahead and lay out the two motions. Go ahead, Tom.
So to Carrie's, there's two timelines in play. There is the timeline for the entity itself to get certified by one of the accreditation bodies as meeting the requirements of IEC 170665. Which they'll have to do before they apply for commission approval. It's staff's goal to have the amended application available for use on July 1st of 2021. And if someone were able to get the application in, it could end up on the August or October commission agendas, just depending on the time and on the timing of the application. Mo, does that sound right?
Yeah, sure. That's consistent with the law. Yeah, yes.
Yep.
That's doable. Sure.
And then, Tom, to Jamie's question, I think, go ahead, about whether...
As far as Jamie's cool question goes, the accreditation body who's going to certify that they meet the requirements, that's what we expect them to do, is to ensure that these entities are meeting all of the requirements of ISO IEC 17065.
So those that are already approved in statute, I think Jamie wanted to know whether those should remain approved, I think is what he's
saying. Oh, is that what the question? I missed that.
Yeah. Yes,
they will. The answer is yes.
Right. Very good.
Hey, Jeff?
Yeah.
Just to reiterate for Jamie, the way it's written in the law, this is in addition to those that are already approved. So it doesn't do anything to the ones that are already listed in statute. We
wrote
it that way specifically.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, so in order to implement the legislative requirements and as Mo laid out the best options, the first motion, proposed motion, is that the product approval, the POC would recommend that the commission subject approval evaluation entities to criteria similar to those of approving certification entities, including updating ISO IEC 65 to ISO IEC 17065-2012. Is there a motion to that effect in a second, and then Commissioner Hershberger can call the question.
Calvin, I make the motion for option one.
Okay. Is there a second?
Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Commissioner Swope has seconded it.
Thank you, Commissioner Swope and Compton. All in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, great. We've got option one to recommend this to the commission.
All right. That's a motion one. So the second in motion is that the Product Approval Oversight Committee recommends that the commission approve revisions to Rule 61G20-3.008, Board Administrative Code, adding criteria for the approval of product evaluation entities. The criteria for approval will also need to be added to Form 9N 3.001, which is incorporated in the Rule 61G23.001 by reference. Revisions to approve revisions to Rule 61G23.013, authorizing the commission to suspend product evaluation entity approvals. The commission also should approve rule revisions to Rule 61G23.013, authorizing the commission to suspend or revoke the approval of certification agencies, testing labs, quality assurance agencies, and validation entities, and then to approve revisions to Rule 61G23.016 to incorporate standard ISO IEC 17065 as to criteria that will be used for the approval of product evaluation entities. That's the proposed motion to incorporate all the pieces of the legislation related to product approval.
Jeff, can I make that motion as chair, or does it need to be a member?
No, you're allowed to do it. I mean, I think the general provision, Roberts, is it other members, it's the preferences for other members, but the chair is certainly welcome to, especially since I don't think this is really controversial. It's more a matter of getting it done. So go ahead.
Okay, we'll abide by Roberts if possible. I'll ask for the motion in a second then.
Compton, move to approve.
Thank you, Compton. A second?
Second, Swope.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, signify by aye.
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 Any opposed? Unanimous. The second motion passes unanimously also. Thank you.
Great. Just one quick clarification. I know this was intent when Commissioner Compton made the first motion. He said option one. He was talking about the first motion because the way Mo laid it out, option one it's right. It is option one. Okay. I misread it. So very good. We're good. All right. We're ready to roll, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Let's move on to the Department of Business and Professional Regulation reports. And I'll have Jeff Blair facilitate this portion of the meeting. Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we have give me 1 second here to get to the right spot. Too many windows are open. Where is it? Okay. So we have a consent agenda of product approval entities recommended for approval. There are 20. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to comment on any of those? Is there any POC member that needs to recuse themselves or have any pulled for individual consideration? If not, Mr. Chairman, I think we're ready for a motion to approve the consent agenda of entities as it was posted.
Great. We need a motion to approve the consent agenda of product approval entities, 22.
Compton, move to approve.
And a second?
Oh, sorry.
Any additional discussion? Hearing none, signify in favor by saying aye.
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 Thank you. Motion passes unanimously.
All right, so our next piece is we have a consent agenda. Those products recommended for approval without comment. There's 253. Is there any member of the public that needs to comment on any of those issue items? Or going back to the POC, is there any POC member that wants to have any pulled off for individual consideration? If not, Mr. Chairman, I think you're ready for your motion.
Great. We need a motion to approve the consent agenda of products recommended for approval.
I'll move to approve.
And a second?
Well, second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, signify in favor by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right, so the next piece is the product approval applications with discussion or comments. Our new procedure is that we have consent agendas, those recommended for approval, and then consent agenda for those recommended for conditional approval based on the conditions stipulated in staff's analysis. So we only have one on the consent agenda for approval, which is FL38053. Is there anybody from the public that wants to comment on that? All right, then coming back to the POC, Mr. Chairman, we look for a motion to approve the consent agenda of those products recommended for approval with comments.
Okay, on the consent agenda, we have one product that needs approval. Do we have a motion to approve?
I'll move to approve.
And a second?
Close, second.
Thank you. All in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. And one last one, Jeff.
Yes, sir. So we have six on the consent agenda recommended for conditional approval. And the conditions are based on those conditions reflected in staff analysis and reflected in the posted documentation. For the last two products, since they were only posted recently, I'll read those conditions. The other conditions have been there, and that's FL22853RA and FL37784R1. For both, the conditions of those is to allow the applicant to specify wind up limitation for the roof tile underlayment, as noted in the public comment. That is in the spreadsheet that is attached now, but I just wanted to read those since they were later than the previous ones. Does anybody from the public need to comment or wish to comment on any of the consent agenda recommended for conditional approval?
This is Zach Priest.
Oh, go ahead, Zach.
I'd like to make a comment on those last two last two board approvals, because I am the engineer of record on those. As I detailed in my response to the original comment, one of my large concerns here is the absence of a test method in the code or in the TRI manual related to this requirement for design pressures to be listed. So currently, an underlayment for every other roof system other than the tile roof systems are not tested directly for wind uplift. Okay, so currently there is no test method that includes tile underlayments as an explicit either requirement or even any procedural details related to the development of design pressures for these products. The HVHZ does not require underlayment testing for uplift, and the body of the code is not explicit to requiring underlayment testing for these systems. Uplift testing contained in the SBC that does exist relates to roof tile assemblies, which in fact does incorporate an underlayment in the testing. And in turn, the information from this testing is presented in the roof tile manufacturer's for product approval. What we're talking about here, folks, is a underlayment component approval, not a roof tile manufacturer approval. The current requirement in TRI is a reference for the end user to document the design pressure only from the product approval. The requirement is not explicit for the product approval to contain the design pressure. But again, the important aspect, as I see it as the evaluating engineer, is the requirement for the test method is absent. The test methods are not explicitly inclusive of these systems, as I stated before, and probably most alarming is that I have personally observed testing that is inappropriate for use for development of design pressures in these product approvals that manufacturers have tested. This level of variability in choosing the method itself only serves to undermine the confidence of these approvals, in my opinion, and therefore creates potential risk to the public. And this puts then all the risk on professional engineers. These specific Florida product approvals are under Method 1D, which of course we know is for codified test methods. This, of course, is outside the realm of that codification. And without having a standard test method, I think we're putting undue risk on the engineering community.
Okay, thank you. So is there anybody else in the public that wishes to comment on any of these items on the consent agenda?
Yes, this is Mike Silvers with FRSA.
Go ahead, Mike.
Commissioners and staff, thank you for the opportunity to comment and for staff to take a look at this and for their analysis. As you commissioners recall, and most of you staff members as well, there was a lot of discussion about ASC E 716 and its adoption and its complexity. Once it was adopted for both the code in general and roofing in particular, FRSA went about trying to train roofing contractors how to arrive at both the size of the zones required under ASC E 716 and the pressure coefficients that are created by it, which were much higher than what we dealt with previously and considerably more complex. We went about immediately trying to train not only roofing contractors, but code officials as well who had a lot of questions. We've been fairly successful in that and continue to endeavor to do so. We'll have four programs specific to that training at our convention in July. Once we arrive at those pressures, the way we direct our members to look at this is to look at product approval, and particularly for tile. Tile in Florida is not a roof covering in and of itself. A roof covering description is the covering applied to the roof deck for weather resistance, fire classification, or appearance. Tile in Florida cannot be installed as a roof covering without an underlay. The underlayments in tile are different than all other steep slope roof systems in that they have to be a watertight underlay. It doesn't require, it doesn't depend on water shedding to accomplish what it has to. I think that it's very clear that components and claddings need to meet the pressures of ASC E 716. We don't think it's appropriate for FRSA and TRIA to dictate how the tests are done. I think there is a fair argument to be made that something should be included in the code. We're willing to offer a code amendment to that accomplish that in this coming code cycle in the second phase. But we feel like eliminating the ability for contractors to find a pressure for these underlayments will undermine the ability for them to create a load path, which, as most of you know, is much like a chain. If we remove one link of the chain, we have a problem, and we think that that's what this does. We need pressures for these underlayments and are willing to work with trying to make it a little clearer in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Any other member of the public who wishes to speak?
Yeah, hello, this is Zach Priest again. I would like to add something. I just want to point out that the load path, as is tested currently, does exist. The testing occurs, as I stated before, in the roof tile assembly when that is tested for uplift and overturning. So I do want to point out that this is talking about testing the underlayment itself, not as part of the roof system, but solely the underlayment, okay, and not through the load path. So this is an unusual circumstance. There is no other roof system that I deal with or have ever dealt with, and I have extensive experience in here where you test the product outside the load path.
All right, thank you. Any other buddy from the public who hasn't spoken yet that'd like to speak?
Yeah, Jeff, Eric Stafford.
Okay, Eric, sure.
Yeah, I apologize for my condition. I'm dealing with a little bit of a summer cold, so sorry about that. But Eric Stafford with IBHS, we agree with Mike Silvers and FRSA. Particularly a couple of things. I'm going to respond to a couple of comments made also. But first, if you look at the FRSA manual, while it specifically, it may not specifically require or state in the text, I mean, it clearly implies that the underlayment has to meet the uplift requirements. If you look on page 17 under the roof project design flow chart, and then of course table 1A on pages 23 and 24 specified the design pressures for roof underlayment. We think it's pretty clear. We do agree that there needs to be some clarity. I've talked with FRSA about it, and I think we're going to work towards something maybe in the code next cycle. But a particular concern for us is this evaluation report in particular, and Mike touched on this, it applies to roof covering section, roof tiles set in the following tile adhesive. And this is where the low cap that Mike was talking about comes into play. If the tile is adhered to the underlayment's got to transfer the force at the load down to the deck. Now, I hear this talk about roof systems and it's tested as a system. This week I've looked up several tile approvals that simply refer to, for the underlayment, simply refer to an underlayment in accordance with the Florida Building Code, which, if this product was approved as written, that would apply as well. So, in our opinion, it's a little bit irresponsible particularly when you deal with roof tiles that are adhered to the underlayment. We think that the design pressure should be added here. Thank you.
Anybody else in the public who hasn't spoken yet would like to speak?
Can I speak again? This is Zach Priest.
Well, Zach, you've already spoken twice, so Listen, you need to stop. I'm speaking right now. What I was about to say, if you make it brief, then I'm going to go back to staff for Moe's analysis, and then I'm going to make a suggestion to the POC on how to proceed. So please make it very quick.
I will. Thank you for the opportunity to speak a third time here. I do just want to clarify that, and I've spoken to Mike about this, I spoke to Moe about this, that I am not opposing adding the design pressure. I'm simply stating that currently a test method does not exist.
Okay, thank you. All right, well, we've heard from the public, so I'm going to go back to the POC. Mo, do you want to say anything on these before we move forward?
Yes, I think I understand what Zach's concern. I understand what Mike's concern. And, when this issue came up, I looked at what we have approved so far. We do approve underlayments. We do approve underlayments for tiles. When I looked at it, I found that there is a number of applications that we have approved for roof tiles that do provide for the uplift resistance and the slash design pressure, especially for those applications that reference the FRSA manual. Because the FRSA manual is used as a means of installation. The manufacturer say, my installation instruction is the manual. So when you go to the manual, as Mike said, yes, there is a specific requirement that the underlayment for the tile has to meet an uplift, provide for uplift resistance, and also it provide for a table for the design pressure. So I think in this case, we felt that, since you are as a manufacturer, referencing this manual as a means of compliance, then yes, you need to meet the manual. So, and that's why the staff analysis says, you need to provide the design pressure. Is it true, as Zach said, that the code does not really provide for specific standards for, determining the uplift resistance on the underlayment. However, like anything else in the Florida Building Code, when the code is silent about a specific standard for a specific product, we do go to Chapter 17 of the Florida Building Code Section 1708.2, which says, hey, you know, if the code doesn't prescribe a specific standard for a product, then it, you know, it is really, then they defer to the evaluation engineer or an evaluation entity to come up with the compliance criteria for performing that test. And that really has been done throughout this state product approval program. We have a lot of products that's referenced in the code or situations where there is no standard, reference standard, and we rely on an evaluation entity to come up with the compliance criteria. The other thing, I looked at those applications that have been approved, where the manufacturer or the evaluation entity has specified an uplift resistance for the underlayment. Majority of them, they mainly use the standard reference in section 1504.3.1. As the basis for the testing, which is mainly the, in this case, factory mutual 4474 and UL 1897. So that has been accepted through, you know, the approval of these applications. So for Zach, you know, sure he can you know, follow the same approach. But I think as really discussed by Mike and all that, it seems there is, you know, the concern is valid, and that's why the staff really provided this specific recommendation. And thank you.
Thank you, Mo. So POC members, if you're comfortable with conditional approval for those two products, we can approve the consent agenda as it is with the six. If anybody wishes to pull those two off for individual consideration and approve the other on consent, that's your option. So, what's your pleasure, POC members?
It's Brian Swope. If I follow FRSA and Mo's recommendation, I would be pulling the two items, correct?
No, you wouldn't need to pull the two items in that case because we would just approve the consent agenda of all six because the condition is the condition that staff laid out that you know, Eric Stafford and Mike Silver spoke in favor of. You wouldn't need to pull them, but if you want to discuss them individually, you should pull
them. No, I just wanted to make sure that I was on the same page because I'm in full agreement with Mo and Mike and Eric as well. So I'll leave that and I'll make that motion to accept the agenda.
The motion is to approve the consent agenda products with comments recommended for conditional approval, so we would need a second.
Thompson, second.
All right, Commissioner Hershberger.
Great, thank you, Brian and Mr. Compton. We have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion? Hearing none, can you signify aye in favor of?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. And last on the consent is the DPD applications. Jeff?
Sir, there are 95 applications, two with comments, and Mo, I believe you're satisfied with all of those, and so they're all approved. Is that correct, Mo?
Yes, we are satisfied with that, sure.
All right, so there's no action needed from the POC, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Mo. We move on to the public POC and staff comments. Is there any additional public comment? Hearing none, is there any POC member comments? Is there any staff comments?
No, thank you.
Great. Thank you all for your participation. Interesting discussion. I know that the product approval process gets complicated at times, and it looks like there may be a need for a little bit more structural testing. But as far as product approval, I think the committee did a great job today. So thank you for your participation. Being no further business, we stand adjourned.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.